I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Glamour. Hey, it's okay. I'm your host, Joe Elvin. I'm the editor-in-chief of Glamour. We've got some proper clever clogs on the show today, so you might actually get some wisdom in amongst my usual kind of ramblings. We're going to be talking about everything from whether or not it's okay to hate someone, to mental health, and that all-important perennial hair. So stay tuned. I've got two wonderful guests on the show today. I have to say she's wonderful because she controls all the money for Glamour. It's Lucy Jones, Managing Editor.
Hello, everyone.
And the incomparable, the very, very tall television presenter, podcast presenter and author, Rick Edwards.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. I like incomparable.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, people compare me to other people quite a lot.
Really? Who's the worst and the best?
I don't know if it's necessarily the worst, but when the first time I was ever on telly, I was doing a paper review on Rise, the ill-fated Channel 4 breakfast
yeah.
show.
Yeah.
The one that nobody watched and yet somehow everybody hated. Which was a conundrum in itself. And someone wrote online, and this had kind of felt like the early days of people writing about people online.
I didn't know the internet was around then.
The internet was just about around. Yeah. And someone said that I was a cut-price home counties version of gobby northern narcissist Vernon Kay.
Right. Like, well, at least I have to commend them for putting thought into that review.
Yeah, yeah.
There's that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought, well, it's nice to be written about. how exciting, Sunday to show my parents. But also, not from the home counties.
No, I don't think you're anything like Vernon Kay. And unless
tall.
You just sort of, yeah,
tall.
You have a head. That's yeah. about it. Yeah.
Got a head. Went yeah. on to be a T4 presenter. So it was sort of strangely prescient.
Yeah.
And I guess being a TV presenter, you are essentially a narcissist.
Yeah.
That's one of the main features for most
well,
TV
you
presenters.
Know, and you look very good, so as a narcissist, I feel like I should tell you that.
Thank you. Thank you very
yeah.
much indeed.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be a wonderful, wonderful addition to your podcast. I'm very, very happy. The compliments are flying.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're very happy that you are here. Now, tell me you have a new book out to support your... Now, you do a podcast.
Yes.
So we're already feeling a little bit on edge, aren't we? It's like a professional podcaster. In the pod cupboard.
I've already coughed on the mic and
yeah,
everything.
But, you know.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll snip that out. But we'll never know.
But the book Science-ish mm-hmm. is the spin-off from, or,
yes.
you know, the thing that happened after the thing that is the podcast. That's
yeah,
the best way to describe it, isn't it?
That's exactly how I've been describing yeah. it. Just say thing loads.
yeah.
Yeah, my publisher actually said, try not to always talk about the podcast. Talk about the book as its own thing. But I've just been ignoring that because I think
yeah,
it makes more sense to talk
about
that.
Your publisher is not the boss of me. And
no.
So,
and
yeah.
are they here? No.
No.
So, you know, never mind. Yeah, so we've been doing this podcast for a couple of years, myself and Dr. Michael Brooks. And, I mean, I don't think this is unfair to say. Dr. Michael Brooks has a PhD in quantum physics. And I have got a science degree, but can't remember that much of it. So he is the sort of science part, and I'm very much the ish.
Right.
So that's how it kind of dovetails together. And we talk about the science of films. I mean, in theory, we talk about the science of any work of fiction. So it could be, we have done books, because, you know, clever. and we could do a TV show. I think we might do.
Yeah.
We have never done a play, because I get very fidgety in plays.
Oh, but it might be the groundbreaker, you know?
No, but I can't fit in the seats.
Do you get... I always get over it, but I'm always slightly embarrassed for everybody on stage. I'm really, really tense, and then I get into it. But,
I stay in the first state. I feel quite awkward for everyone, because they're like just up there, sort of vaguely embarrassing themselves. And I'm in a tiny seat. And then when the interval comes, I feel just incredibly depressed because there's still more to come.
You are very tall, so I imagine your knees in any sort of like theatre seat are up near your chin.
This is the thing. If there was an equivalent of the Odeon premiere seat in the theatre, I think I'd enjoy it much more.
Yeah.
Or all plays should be 90 minutes long, no interval.
They're very long.
Yeah, like 90 minutes is a great length for a play.
It's very
or
hard
a film.
To pack dinner in, isn't it? That's what I always find. That always really, really affects my decision to go. It's like,
eat so early.
Not hungry at 5 o'clock, starving, and everything's closed at 10:30.
Unless you go for dim sum.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
That's it.
Yeah.
But we're slightly getting off topic.
We are, sorry. So this book that I'm here to promote.
So Science-ish, the book, not the podcast.
Yes.
It's basically, it's taking those works that I've been very much enjoying. Could Planet of the Apes actually happen this morning? I love this idea. I kind of wish it would happen.
You'd like to
they
be...
They can't do a worse job, right?
Ruled by chimp overlords.
They're so cute.
You do sort of feel like, why not just give them a go?
Yeah. I completely agree. We've got almost an orangutan in the White House.
Exactly, I was going to say.
Let's keep going.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fairly unlikely that we will ever elect a chimp leader.
I don't agree
with
you.
But maybe they won't give us the choice.
Yeah.
Maybe they will, you know, they will subjugate us and remove our right to vote, and it will just be chimps voting, in which case we'll definitely get a chimp leader.
Well, the book actually sort of like poo-poos my whole wish for that to happen, which is rather disappointing, but I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that we try and do, so each chapter has deals with a film, and then we try and ask three big science questions. And what we try to avoid is that kind of myth-busting thing, because when any film that has any kind of scientific component to it comes out, immediately... nerds, I think it's okay to call them nerds. Geeks is the preferred. So the geek nerds, they get online and they list all of the things that are wrong or scientifically inaccurate.
I think they're also called single men.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So the geek nerd single men are all there tapping away.
Yeah.
And saying, well, actually, this is not. Yeah. And I just find if you're interested in that, you can get it. Online very easily. I'm more interested in sort of exploring the real science and the science conversations that are provoked by films.
Yeah.
And so we don't spend a lot of time going, well, this wouldn't happen and this is nonsense. We try and look at how close it is.
I love it when a film turns out to be sort of strangely prescient.
Yes.
Like, I always think of Minority Report and how really science fiction-y that looked to, you know, walk into Gap and have some virtual reality saleswoman read your retinas and go, hey, Mr. Brown, how are those pants working out? You know, and actually, that's not far off what's really happening. And I found that quite fascinating.
No, it isn't. And you'll be delighted to hear that we have done a podcast about the film Minority Report.
Oh, wow. So I do love that film. Yeah.
It's a great film, and it would have
as long as the robot spiders aren't any closer to reality. Is that what you're telling me? That
the robot spiders? I feel like they're. If you've got a spare 10 minutes and would like to be terrified, check out Boston Dynamics YouTube videos. Boston Dynamics are a robotics company, and they've made all sorts of quite athletic robots, and so robots that run around a warehouse, jump over
just
hurdles.
Just sounds like one of your kinky Google searches. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
athletic robots.
Yeah, guys. Yeah. the lonely nights, Joe. You've got to get through them, but they're really as the name suggests, they're incredibly dynamic and made in Boston. So I feel like those guys, if they wanted to make those robot spiders, they wouldn't have a problem.
I'm all right with spiders. It's the don't make a robot snake. That's all I ask of science. Please, no.
Well, would you prefer a robot snake or an actual snake?
Oh, God. Probably the robot snake. Yeah, you're right. You make a valid point.
Because you feel like you might be able to find its off switch.
Yeah.
Whereas, and it might not be as slimy, you know?
Pour some water on it.
Snakes are not slimy.
I know, but they look it and they're horrible. But look, you're talking to an Aussie now.
Don't judge a snake by its cover.
I'll judge a snake by the one that was thrown around my neck when I was 12 years old by a mischievous boy at school. Yeah.
Yeah. Who'd brought a snake in?
Yeah. That's what used to happen in Australia.
That's so mischievous. I love that boy.
It's peak Australian. You'd sort of like, he'd say, hey, girls, and open his school bag and there would be a snake in the bag.
Yeah, which sort of sounds like a euphemism, doesn't it?
I'm telling you.
Like
it
the
was
old
an
popcorn box.
Goddamn
snake. In my bag.
Yeah. No, I never saw the euphemistic ones.
Have you kept in touch with this snake boy?
No. I think he's a policeman as well.
Maybe now he does have a robot snake. Maybe he's developed his
I don't know where
passion.
We got to robot snakes. I'm so sorry. You're here to have a sensible conversation.
I much prefer conversations like this where we talk about the snakes emerging out of bags.
So what has been, just tell me, what's your favourite chapter in the book?
My favourite chapter is probably The Matrix. One of my favourite films. And I think that there's an awful lot of questions that come out of it. And they're all weirdly quite prescient. So we talk about, are we living in a simulation? And without going into the detail of the chapter, the answer is maybe. Like, it feels like, odd to put a number on it, but there's about a third chance. It's what some very clever people have calculated, that we are living in a simulation.
I'd be fine with that. I'd just rather they tell me so I could go and have a nice lie down.
Well, the thing is, there's nothing. You kind of go, oh no, I'm a simulation. It makes no difference.
No.
The only worry. So there's a guy called Nick Bostrom who works at Oxford, very smart philosopher guy, and his area is existential threats to humanity. So it's sort of, you know, fairly depressing. And he was once asked, I think actually by Dr. Michael Brooks, what do you think is a bigger danger to humanity? Climate change or nuclear war or getting switched off by the people running the simulation? And he didn't hesitate, apparently just went, we're getting switched off. He's like, absolutely. That's a way bigger problem because we can do nothing about it. Because the idea is that if there are people running these incredibly detailed simulations and we are part of it and we just don't know it, they might, like, ours feels like it might be going a bit wrong at the moment. And they might just go, nah,
reboot.
Okay, reboot, or just switch this one off, start another one. And that would be bleak. That would be really bleak.
Well, we wouldn't know about it, though, either.
No.
So, yeah.
But it's a thing to have hanging over you, isn't it?
But it's almost better than the alternative. It's almost better than worrying about nuclear war. At least, it's just over now. You don't have to worry about war.
How did you get into all of this? Why is this a passion?
I think from when I was at school, I always liked maths and science, and I did maths and science A-levels. And then I went to university to do maths because I just wanted to make sure I was getting loads of girls.
Mm. Yeah, that's the guarantee.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, as you know, it's a surefire winner. And then I changed after a year or so to do science because maths was a bit hard. Science obviously a doddle. And then I've just retained my interest. So I just diligently read my New Scientist every week. And then my friend who set up a sort of podcast platform told me that he'd been working with Michael, and Michael wrote my favourite popular science book. So I was very excited to meet Michael. And they said, do a thing together. And
amazing.
And here we are.
Now, Kat's going to wrap me up on this, but I love stories like that on a serious note where you find something you love and it turns into this whole universe of possibilities of how to
make
a living and like getting up in the day, simulation or not, you know, yeah.
Exactly, because I think that it's been quite a long process, I think it's finally happening that I'm going to be able to, make a living out of the thing that I really love and like talking about in my real life.
It's fantastic.
Which is quite lucky, quite a privilege, I suppose.
Now we're going to talk about hair.
Yes.
The rules of the game, I don't know if it is a game, but, you know, it kind of is. It's the sort of thing, Rick, that we get into huge arguments about in glamour features meetings, mm-hmm. all these sorts of topics mm-hmm. that we do on Hey, It's Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it okay to have a signature hairstyle or signature look, I guess, and just stick with it doggedly forever and ever and ever? What's your view?
My view is 100%. And I say this as a man who's had the same haircut for at least 10 years. And every now and again, I wonder to myself if I need to change things up. And I can't even bring myself to do it. I went to the hairdressers 3 months ago and thought, this is it. I'm going to get a crop. And then I just bottled it because I'd miss the sort of whatever this is, quiff, sort of quiffish. And also it's nice to have a thing that makes everyone feel quite safe. Like, yeah, it's the hair.
And also, I don't know how old you are, but, you know, it's sort of like not in your 20s. If you've got, I've upset him now. You've got a very good, healthy sort of like mane of hair.
Thank you.
And I think if men are sort of like, you know, retaining their hair, they kind of should probably show it off.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I think mane has suggested.
You could go full lion. You could easily.
I did actually. When I was younger, I had a huge sort of lion hair.
Oh, like was it Bon Jovi?
It was. Yeah, but it's because my hair's very thick. So it sort of was growing out as well. Just a big hair helmet. and then I got my first proper job on telly, and they sort of said, "This hair helmet."
we need to Google
could it
this.
Go?
I know. Yeah, have we got family pictures somewhere you can dig?
Yeah, out? I think they would be. They're around. I've had some absolutely shocking. I did a lot of peroxide stuff.
Yeah, you would go through
and
that
doing
phase.
It myself as well, because when you're, I don't have any money, so you just think, well, I'll just buy the stuff, the blue stuff from Boots, and then stick it on, and you get that. Sort of tied mark of red rawness
hot
around the around the hairline, and it would look awful. It would go sort of orange sometimes. I had the M&M sort of crew cut dyed blonde at one point.
Wow,
that was an absolute mess. And, gold hoop earring.
And when did you meet your wife? Was it during this phase or after this phase?
No, very much after this phase. Very much in the safe phase that we find ourselves in now. I don't know though. There's something sort of charming about that towny look that I was sporting, I think.
If you could bring one back, what would you bring back?
Genuinely, I think the dyed blonde crop. The M&M.
The M&M.
Mm.
It's a strong look.
Peroxide's very in at the moment.
Yeah.
Sort of like the platinum look.
Yeah, yeah. I think it might look a bit try hard if I did it now. And I mean, as you mentioned, not in my 20s. And I think it's probably the kind of thing you may be doing in your 20s.
Oh, I don't know. I think that I think as I get older that I'm getting
more experimental.
Sillier with certainly the way I dress. I don't know. I kind of feel like as I get older, I'd like people to notice.
And give less
other
fucks
things
as well.
Yeah, maybe. Although I'm clinging onto the hair. I only.
Yeah, you've had that hair for a while.
Yeah. Thanks for mentioning. I'd say I was in my late 30s when I found the hairdresser who can never leave me, or I will hunt him down. Mm. Hi, George. He has been mentioned on this podcast before. And he actually sometimes, I think he feels guilty that he hasn't come up with some fantastic new idea for me. Mm. And so a couple of times he's done things like got out the crimpers and stuff. And I was sort of like halfway through politely go, George, once he tried to
put
get me
the
to,
crimpers down, yeah, George.
Once he tried to get me to grow it and I said, I look awful with long hair. And he was like, no. And then one day I walked in and he said, actually, you're right. You look really awful with long hair, and cut it all off again. So this is it. This is the only hair I can have. And so I have to be fine with it.
But it's also nice to have an outside eye on that.
Yeah.
So he's had a look at the long hair and gone, no, you're absolutely right. I shouldn't have doubted you.
And as I wasn't offended, I was just like, I told you. Now will you let me just have the old hair, please?
Mm. Yeah. It's nice to have a look. I'm really embarrassed. I've got my hair scraped back in a horrible, messy beehive today. But I've had the same cut for 10 years. And it just kind of is me. It's like, Lucy, there's a hair. That's her. That's her thing.
Yeah.
It's nice. Nice. It shapes your personality.
I can't quite tell how long
it is.
It's a decent
thing. It is
length,
very
isn't
long.
It?
Yeah.
It's like a big thing. But I went through experiments with colour when I was younger. I did Florence mm-hmm. the Machine Red, which was great, mm-hmm. great fun, mm-hmm. but hard to maintain. Mm-hmm. Now I can just bush it up. And I think, yeah, I'm really lazy with hair as well. If you leave your signature look, you don't have to do anything.
No, that's true. You're never going to let anyone down with your signature look.
No.
Have you got any other signature looks? I mean, I don't know. I get so bored with clothes. I don't really have a signature. Maybe I need a signature fashion sense.
My thing that has been a slight revelation in the last probably 3 years is I only ever want to wear stuff that is really comfy. And you can get comfy stuff that also looks nice. So, for example, if I wear a trouser that doesn't have an elasticated or drawstring waist now,
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hate it. So, I mean, you'll notice.
It's very dangerous territory.
There we go.
Yeah.
Elasticated.
Yeah. I can confirm. Elasticated waist.
It's really. Yeah. But also, like, you don't sort of look at him and think, well, he hasn't made an effort. It's a nice, smart,
clean
smart, pair of, smart
indeed.
Pair of magnets.
Indeed.
And then a sweatshirt. I love a sweatshirt. It's very unusual that I'm not wearing a sweatshirt today, but I thought I'd make an effort to put on a proper jumper.
It's very smart.
And that's sort of it. And then just white trainers. I have a huge arsenal of white trainers.
So you
all
do.
All of them.
Very clean.
Nigh on identical. Yeah, I spend a lot of time. I was talking to my friend about this who just wrote an article, a very good article about how a lot of men are imprisoned by the need to keep their white trainers pristine.
It's not just
and
men.
And he said you have to try and maybe, but I feel like, yeah, maybe I just haven't spoken to women about their relationship with their white shoes, but I know a lot of men who have their old toothbrushes. I have to set aside half an hour every week to just go and just clean my shoes in the bathroom.
I have to say, I spent an eye-watering amount of money on a pair of white Celine court shoes.
Yeah.
And inevitably, even though I've tried to wear them sparingly, the tips of the pointy toes are kind of going. And I haven't done it yet, but I'm slightly almost reaching for the Tippex.
Which
seems sacrilegious to do. Sorry if anyone who works at Celine is listening. But I don't know how else to maintain those. You can't stick those in the washing machine.
No, you can't. How are you using Liquid Proof?
What?
So you need to get yourself some Liquid Proof. Liquid Proof's amazing. You spray
it
on.
Everyone, this is.
So yeah. Those geeks you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah. Hi there.
Yeah.
So, and also. I've got loads of little Crepe Protect wipes that I always have with me. So if something happens today, like I spill my coffee on my shoe, no problem. The wipes are out.
Emergency packet.
I have to say, and sorry, I know this is getting really off-piste, but now we're on to this. This is useful information. Those M&S hand wipes that have sort of like got the orange scent.
Yeah.
They have saved me a fortune in dry cleaning.
Yeah.
You can amazing.
Just do a little, not on silk. That's the only thing you don't want to do it on, isn't it?
I think I have done it on silk with good results.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've noticed a little bit of colour running when I've tried the
wipes.
I can
talk about laundry
silk.
All day, I swear to God.
But honestly,
but maybe
get,
we shouldn't.
Get yourself, please. I mean, I don't even work for Liquid Proof yet. But the stuff, you spray it on your shoes and it repels everything. It's honestly amazing.
Oh,
so you can wear suede shoes.
I'm so glad you came in today, Rick.
Yeah, it's not a problem.
Yeah. Slightly changing the topic. We do go all over the place on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's slightly more serious, but is it okay to talk about your mental health on social media?
Hmm.
Yeah, we need to think about that one, don't we, right?
Yeah, I feel like it's the kind of thing I don't want to rush into. You know, sometimes I find this on certain... Can I name... I don't know if I can name a television show here. I will. So if you go on the right... Have you ever been on The Right Stuff?
No, there was a close call once, but no.
So I like going on The Right Stuff.
Yeah.
But the thing about The Right Stuff is that you will occasionally be in a situation where you have to think on your feet about something you've never really thought about before that is a big news story.
And it just happened that day.
And it's that day. Yeah. And then Matthew Wright says, And what do you think about this, Rick? And as the words are coming out, you're trying to work out with whether you agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's always prefixed by the short phrase, I reckon, which basically means I have absolutely no knowledge or sort of preconceived notion of what I think about this.
This is why you and I aren't Daily Mail millionaires, because some people don't care if they believe what they're saying or not. They just say something really heinous.
Spout. Yeah. But I feel bad. And as I was just about to answer that question, I thought, hang on a minute, this feels like an I reckon.
I mean, it's a delicate one. We're talking about this because it's on the day this podcast drops, it's actually Mental Health Awareness Day.
Yes.
So it's something that, and it's a huge thing that we champion at Glamour Magazine is, and we really believe it is okay to talk about your mental health. And I've never known anybody whose problem got worse from sharing it. When it comes to this arena. So I think that it's, I really believe in it from that point of view. I suppose there's a bit of a tipping point with, I mean, I was telling you earlier about, you know, relatives of mine who might get on Facebook and go, oh, I'm just sick of it all. And sort of like whipping up the drama and whipping up the attention. And I think that I don't know if I would bear all my huge, really personal, really quite serious problems on social media. Mm. I'd probably have a one-on-one with somebody if it was something that grave.
Probably what I think as well. Like I'm very lucky in that up to this point, I don't think I have any serious mental health problems. So I don't know how I'd feel if I did. But if it is a real issue. I can't see that talking about it on social media is going to be a great curative. Small things, for sure.
Yeah.
But a big thing, you want to go and seek proper help. Mm. And I don't think you're getting proper help from people in 140 or now possibly 280 characters on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's all people that you don't really know. And there's so much nuance that you can't express in that medium.
Thinking while you're speaking then, I think the one area where it definitely helped me was when I was a new mother.
Okay, yeah.
And I was at home going mad on my own, just sort of like questioning everything I did with this child that was now the boss of me. I was so used to being the boss of everybody else and I didn't know what I was doing. Mm. And I was feeling really, really insecure about that. So I logged onto Mumsnet and just said, does anybody else feel like they're just really fucking this up, basically. And it was so nice to get that community back. And I, you know, you hear sort of like good and bad things about Mumsnet, and there can be some bullies on there, but that was such an amazing, affirming experience.
I think that's the difference when you're extending out to get access to a new support network, and you're spreading maybe awareness of an issue, maybe not that you have, maybe that someone else has. I think those kind of relationships with social media and mental health work quite well, and I think that's when it's positive. But I agree, I think people can go into this sort of, I'm just ranting, I'm just trying to get some attention, and then it just spoils it for everybody else that actually needs help.
Again, very difficult with people on social media, because you kind of feel like you know them. Like, I've got lots of people who I would probably sort of qualify as friends who I don't really actually know and have barely even met in real life. And so you kind of got to retain an awareness that you don't really understand the full situation. But I do look at some people on social media and think they are just attention seeking.
Yeah.
And that, as you say, that's not a very helpful thing, because it kind of,
it mists the people that actually are saying, do you know what, I'm struggling today, I'm actually trying to reach out for some help here. And if someone's going, oh my God, I need help every day, and I don't know why I put that voice on, but it just kind of, it doesn't help.
I don't know, listening to you guys, I'm kind of now coming around to the opinion that I think generally, yes, it's a good thing. That's where I'm going to stick my stick in the ground. I'm thinking about things like coming up to Christmas. I love Sarah Millican's hashtag she does every year called Join In for Lonely People who... It's actually really, it's become, I think, a brilliant tool for helping unconnected people to feel connected. And I think, you know, pros and cons, warts and all, I'd have to come down on, let it hang out, tell someone, even if it's someone you don't know, because it might make a difference.
Yeah, and I think you're making connections with people in similar situations to you. It's obviously amazing at I think it's usually best when there is a real life component that kind of follows on. Yeah. Like there's a really fantastic organisation that works with old people who are just sort of on their own the whole time, and it was sort of organised through Twitter and online, and then you basically kind of, not exactly adopt an old person, but you have an old person over for Sunday lunch, so they get to have their Sunday lunch with people and chat to them, and that would be very difficult, I think, to orchestrate pre social media. And it has a clear real world impact on people who are, you know, really struggling with loneliness, which is great.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think yes, and we would have to stress that I just know that even from just sort of like opening up, just I've never known there to be a bigger power than just being honest with how you're feeling, and whether that's, I don't know, sometimes it's appropriate to sort of like shout out to the world that you need a bit of reassurance, but please, please, please find that one person who will listen to you. And I honestly think even just saying, oh God, this is a problem for me, out loud, immediately diffuses the problem to some degree. Is it okay, guys, Lucy Jones, Rick Edwards, is it okay to genuinely hate someone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you're so evil. I love everyone. You know me, Lucy. Charm and delight and joy itself.
She pays my bills. She pays my bills.
I don't know you as well, Jo, but I think
I might be lying about that.
I think you might be. Yeah. So I think it's actually, I had a policy when I was at school, and I think this is maybe slightly psychotic, but I thought the way to deal with the sort of vagaries of social dynamics at school is you pick one person to hate and then you like everyone else. So you just
channel,
it's good, isn't it? You just like, right, just focus on one, direct all the anger towards that person. Unlucky for them. And then everyone else you can be sort of
now
sunny and
light with.
Now I'm thinking
of the little nerdy kid that everybody picks the same person and he's the one that gets picked.
No. You don't pick. So I picked Nick Williams.
I've always hated him.
Yeah, hi,
he's
Nick.
The worst.
Yeah. What's that in your bag? A snake? Fuck off. So Nick Williams actually was a bit of a bully, I think.
Okay, I'm on board now.
And he was kind of quite popular, and I really didn't like him. And I just focused all my hatred on him, and I found it very, it really worked for me. So I sort of recommend that you just pick your hate figure.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I don't like hating people. I'll say that. I'm not perfect in any way, but I don't like, and there are people who've done me wrong over the years, and I feel like it's such wasted energy to care about that person. So hate to me implies that you care about somebody, at least in some way.
Yeah,
that's true. You haven't had a healthy getting over period.
That. But I don't know. I really hate Donald Trump, but then that's, you know, that's a kind of a big section of the community.
Yeah.
But I don't know him, but I feel like I do, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's trickier hating people that you don't know personally. Because there are various people that, you know, you see on telly or whatever, and you think, well, I don't like them. But I always try and remember that they might well be different. I mean, your Trump example, he probably isn't different.
Yeah.
But lots of people have, you know, they have their persona, don't they?
Trying to think if I do hate anyone. I don't. I do that thing on the plane, and I don't get on going, right, who can I hate? But there's always someone who does something really antisocial the minute you're on there. And then I kind of, that's where I focus all my frustration with a 15-hour flight, with on the person who has taken their shoes off and stuck their feet on the top of the headrest in front of them. And people like that.
I saw that very thing recently, and their feet were right up, almost touching the bit where the air comes out. And I just thought, you can't seriously expect to do that.
I just don't get some people.
And not be loathed by every other passenger.
Yeah. I mean, and I was telling you earlier, I don't hate her. I've never met her, but I do kind of hate the behaviour of the lady I saw in Paris yesterday who just squatted and peed between two cars on the street. Now, she wasn't some sort of unfortunate vagrant. She looked really well-dressed and hair-combed and makeup and a nice coat. What the hell was she doing?
She street pisser.
Yeah.
Mm.
If there
I mean,
is
I
such
like.
A thing.
Well, there is. Yeah. You saw her.
Yeah.
I mean, I like her. I'm balancing out your hate. What confidence. What absolute brazen confidence.
I am never
going
to forget it.
I think the people I hate the most, I think usually I have no reason to hate. So it's like a silly hate. It's, you know, that time in Friends when they're just like, I hate that guy just for no reason.
Yeah, I think that's probably quite healthy.
I think
as
that's
well.
A healthy
just
hate.
A sort of little irrational, and you know it's irrational, but you know, why not?
I have a friend who is a fairly well-known person who told me that she once hated me for 6 months because she thought I was somebody else who'd done something else. And she said, when I tell you the story, you're going to laugh. It's so funny. And she still won't tell me the story. Imagine that. Imagine knowing that someone hated you.
Yeah, that's...
That would bother me so much.
Yeah, that feels deeply unfair.
Yeah.
Did she think that you'd pissed in the street in Paris?
I don't know, but I'm seeing her on Saturday and I'm going to pin her down.
You're going to have to pin her down.
Take a snake in your bag just in case.
Some sort of, I want to know who she did hate, who she thought was me.
Mm.
Yeah.
I've just remembered the person that I focus on my hate on at the moment. Ever had the misfortune of dealing with Nigel Lawson?
No, but I know who he is.
Mm.
Nigella's dad, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, ex-Tory, something or other.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think he was Chancellor of the Exchequer or something.
Yeah.
Now he runs the... he's a Lord and he runs the Global Warming Policy Foundation.
He's got a good head of hair. Thought you'd respect that.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have to have such a good head of hair for me to like him. Mm. He's one of these...
What's he done to you,
he's
Rick?
A climate change denier.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I don't like them.
Right, well, then you're with me on old Donnie, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Lawson's really taking it to the next level. And I really... I once shouted at him like a mad person in the middle of a television show. I was in the audience for the Channel 4 referendum debate.
Oh, okay.
And
were you there as TV personality Rick Edwards?
But weirdly, it was one of the situations where they had a whole audience full of, people from the telly or whatever. But they basically briefed everyone to say, okay, be ready to say your piece, be ready to say your piece. But they were never going to get round everyone. And they only asked about three people. And you've got all of these egos in this room and they're getting fuming that they're not getting to say their thing. And so people are like putting their hands up and Paxman's losing control. People are putting their hands up and shouting out. And I felt like I was just watching it and really enjoying it, just watching it unfold. And kind of like laughing at all of these people just like desperate to have their say. And then Paxman went to Nigel Lawson and Nigel Lawson started saying, well, you know, I really care about, you know, our children's future and our grandchildren's future. And I just admit, I was so incensed that before I even knew it was happening, I was bellowing, you're a climate change denier! You're a climate change denier! And then just stopped. It was like, this is on telly. What am I doing?
It's like an out-of-body experience.
I've turned into I'm one of these people.
Maybe they pumped something through the air ducts to make everybody crackers.
Yeah, I was high on it.
Did he respond or did he ignore you?
It was one of those things as well. He was too far away. It's quite a big audience. So it was more that Paxman and him, there was a pause and they were looking around, couldn't see where the noise had come from. The cameras didn't sort of get to me. So it was just a confusing bit of the programme, I would say.
Wow.
Where... Yeah, I mean, it's not my proudest moment, but at the same time, I do really hate Nigel Lawson.
I think we're having Nigella on the podcast soon. I hope she doesn't listen to this one before she does.
Yeah, I mean, she seems...
We don't all hate Lawson. Yeah.
No, I've met her. She's absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how.
I wonder who she hates.
Anyway. Let's ask her.
Yeah.
Imagine if it was me.
Day.
What a triangle.
It's like very Seinfeldian, that sort of all wrapped up. Rick Edwards, it has been an absolute delight. Thank you for coming in and
talking
to us about your book, Science-ish, which is out now.
It is.
And I believe Impossible is back.
Yes, I do a BBC One quiz show, and that comes back on the 16th, so Monday.
That's my husband's birthday. What a treat.
Oh, it is a treat.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't need to get him anything now.
No, you don't. Just stick him in front of that, see how he gets on.
Yeah.
If he likes it, I can send him like one of the cue cards and happy birthday.
Honestly,
on it.
What a thrill.
Honestly, not a problem.
So set him up, I'll go out, everyone's happy.
Well, hang on, why are you going out?
Because it's his birthday, I'm celebrating.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, make sure you tape it.
That works, right? Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, it's on for, it's on forever, so you catch it another day.
Oh, okay. Great. That's handy.
Mm.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Lucy Jones and Rick Edwards.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.